Steve, thanks so much. Hi, everybody. It's Bill and Wendy. Welcome to the Wednesday version of our show, 312-981-7200. You know that. If you want to call or text, please do. Steve Cochran recently had a guest on, and I won't say who it is, but it's Ned Coletti.
I love when you do that.
And
I think you broke my hand.
I've been a fan of Mr. Coletti's for a long time. He's in baseball circles. He's one of the great minds of baseball. But this guy gives a handshake like nobody else on the planet.
Well, he shook your hand first, and then thanks,
you
by
heard
the way.
You heard the snap,
I
right?
did. And
my
then,
bone went like...
And then I hear Bill go, Ned, shake Wendy's hand like you just shook mine. Well, I'm wearing a big-ass ring,
yes.
And I think he broke the ring and yep. two fingers.
Yep.
Why did people do that?
My hand is completely numb. I remember, well, I don't think girls have an equivalent of this, but a lot of dads teach their sons that it's very important to have a nice firm handshake.
No fish handshake.
You don't, yeah.
Because no cold, wet fish.
Right, right. Because then you're perceived as not strong. So from the time you're like two,
right.
My dad would take my hand and go, you shake a man's hand, you got to give him some jolt. Right.
Well, someone told Ned Coletti too many times.
Oh.
Thanks, by the way, for protecting me. You got to shake Wendy's hand just like you shook mine.
Well, but for show purposes, I wanted you to experience
shake this. Shake a Wendy's hand.
Right. You got a friend for life.
Ow. That's all I have to say.
So have you ever shaken, and I'm not saying this of Ned Coletti because he has no agenda here, but I've shaken guys' hands where you go, they're trying to out-muscle you. Like, I don't know what's behind it, but they'll shake your hand, like, so intensely. I think for him, that's just his thing. He just has a grip on him.
I think so, too.
But I can no longer use my right hand. I'm done. From here on in, luckily, Wendy, I don't know if you know this, I'm ambidextrous, so I'll still be able to use my left hand. But my right hand, for all intents and purposes, done. Dead to me.
I think that is how he does it, because typically a man wouldn't squeeze a woman's hand unless that's what he did to everyone.
Right. That's what I'm saying.
I'm not shaking hands anymore with anyone.
Are you done?
I'm going to do like a
high five.
I like the high five. I really do.
Well, the idea of, do you know where shaking hands started?
No.
All right. Like a billion years ago, guys did this as if to say, I don't have any weapons and you don't have any weapons, so this will go well.
Seriously?
Yeah. That was the genesis of the handshake. It was.
Are you a MythBuster today?
Yeah, today I am a MythBuster. It was a prehistoric way of saying, look, even though we come from cavemen, I don't have a club, you don't have a club.
No rock in my hand.
No, I have nothing to hurt you. But back then, they didn't think that thousands of years later, Ned Coletti could use his hand as a weapon. Because he can.
Well,
I'm on the injured reserve list. I cannot use my right hand after that handshake.
I have one of the biggest, widest rings on my right hand, and he smashed my knuckles. It really hurt.
You are wearing the kind of ring that for J.R.R. Tolkien fans, there would be a quest for at some point.
It's pretty
You'd
big.
Have to go through caves and tunnels to find a ring like this. But he went out undaunted. He was not fazed by your ring or what used to be my right hand.
Well, thanks very much for protecting
You're
me.
You're welcome. I'm here for you.
Our next guest today uses his hands for something special.
Mm-hmm. Shouldn't say anything else. That should be,
All right.
That should be the tease.
All right. All right, Bill. We introduced our next guest, and we explained that he really uses his hands for good, not evil, like Ned Coletti did. He smashed
right.
our hands.
Yes, he did.
Chef Andy Chelbana?
Chelbana.
Chelbana.
It's a tough one.
It is a tough one. I want to say Chelbana, but it's Chelbana. You are America's best baker, are you not?
Well, I'm competing to be America's best baker.
You've already won some things, though.
I have won some things. I won the Spring Baking Championship on Food Network, and I also won a show called Sugar Fashion, and I've also competed professionally around the world.
That's impressive. Give us the origin. How did this start?
Oh, boy.
Easy Bake Oven?
Yeah.
I had one.
You know, cooking with light bulbs cannot be beat, Andy. You know this.
Everyone's got one of those in their house, don't they?
Yeah.
Ours is shoved underneath a counter. The cooking started back when I was a teenager in Boy Scouts, and we would go camping, and, mm-hmm. and we always had to cook our own food. And then it just kind of happened when I was 16. My brother called me up one day, and he said, hey, you want a job? And I started working at a restaurant. in Oak Forest.
Where's this?
All right, now, there's a weird little thing going on between you two. Did you recognize him or something? Because you said, are you from here originally?
I recognized the last name, but I had no idea you're from Oak Forest, which is where I grew up as well. And we just found out we grew up about a mile and a half. I was there first, but about a mile and a half away from
you. Sound very snotty saying that.
I just want to claim the territory. I don't want any. This is my town, because it's not. It's my town. But, yeah, we grew up very close by to each other.
Right, and I got my start at the original Pancake House right there.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. I love to cook, but I don't like to bake because you have to follow the instructions precisely or it's going to turn out like crap.
That's what everybody tells me. And
but
we kind of tell them the same thing. It's you have to follow everything. You have to know your recipe, know your ingredients, and it's science.
It is totally 100% science. And I do not, I know it's a green thumb when you garden, a sugar thumb, what do you call
it?
Someone
thumb?
Who bakes.
Sometimes it's a sugar thumb.
Yeah.
You love to bake.
I do, and I like the, obviously I like food.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
who
between
doesn't?
Running my marathons and being an Olympic gymnast, that was last week on the show, I said I was an Olympic gymnast. I enjoy the science side of it. To me, it's therapeutic sometimes baking bread and doing some of these things.
Now, was there strife in your household growing up? Like, did your mom or your dad say, hey, cook, that's our thing. You're not supposed to be a better cook than we are.
No, they cooked.
Yeah.
So that was the other side of it, right? I was cooking when I was camping, and mom was always baking cookies, and dad was always making soup on the weekend and Sunday dinners, you know.
Did the house smell amazing all the time?
All the time.
All the time, yeah.
That is pretty amazing, the smell.
We could smell Andy's house at my house. I used to just put my nose out the window and go, I think they're making banana bread.
Yeah, Barb's baking cookies.
Too bad you didn't know him then. You could have walked over and gotten some nice warm cookies or something. Go ahead.
These competitions, is that a lot of stress for you, or do you feel pretty confident going into a competition? Because this is a major competition, the best baker in the country, right?
Yeah, you know, stressed is dessert spelled backwards.
It is
stressful.
Is that your tagline? Because it should be.
It's one of my dad jokes. There's a lot of them.
Oh, it's so perfect.
There's a lot of stress because, number one, you don't know what you're doing. And then when you get in there, it's all timed. And the time you see on TV, that's the number one question everybody asks. Is the time real? Yeah.
It is real.
So tonight, if we have 90 minutes to make macaroons, you have 90 minutes. There's no extra time. There's no extension. If you're not done.
And that includes cooking them.
Cooking, that's a tricky one because it normally takes a couple days to make them. So we're talking about cooking, cooling, filling, and presenting.
Do you know in advance what the restraints will be, what the constraints will be? Like in terms of, do they tell you in advance which ingredients you'll have, or is that all just done live?
No, it's all live. We find out when we walk in the kitchen and we're standing there, we're told this is what you're going to make.
That's tough.
So you are competing with how many people on the Food Network tonight, 9 p.m.?
Tonight there's 7 left. We started with 8 last week. Margarita went home with the wedding cake challenge. So first episode, they had us do a wedding cake.
Oh, my God. Like one of the hardest things to do, isn't it?
In 5 hours.
A whole wedding cake, top to bottom, everything in 5 hours.
Bake the cake, fill it, ice it, and decorate it.
And then are you scored equally on presentation and on taste, or is that weighted a little bit?
It's a combination of everything. They really don't break it down for us. It's just, you know, either you did it, you either were the best that day, you were safe, or you went home.
Yeah.
That is so nerve-wracking. What do you win if you walk away with this?
$25,000.
Oh, that's not bad.
Yeah.
That's not bad at all. And I bet even though the $25,000 is nice, the notoriety and the title is probably even more valuable, isn't it?
Sure, to be able to say you're the best baker in America, you betcha. The money's nothing, you know.
Right, because you're a teacher at Joliet Junior College, correct?
Right, yes.
Yeah, you don't need the money.
Yeah.
You probably spend $25,000 on cinnamon every year.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of funny because when I won spring baking, it was a $50,000 prize.
Yeah.
And then, you know, when you go, 25, it's kind of like, oh, why am I here? But, you know, you joke around a lot about it, but that money, like, it's a nice vacation.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
What is your specialty? If you had to pick, like, your number one sweet treat, what would it be?
You know, I love baking bread. The two things I love to do the most would be baking bread and making ice cream.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, I've asked other people who have been on cooking shows this question, and nobody ever knows the answer. Maybe you do, Andy. The chefs that we see on TV are always angry. What's going on that makes them angry all the time?
We're just angry.
Are you angry people?
You don't seem
to have any anger in you, but every time I see any of the guys on TV, they're furious about something. They're yelling at everybody.
You know, the kitchen, the kitchen's evolving. It isn't necessarily a friendly place. You know, we're rough. If you watch Ratatouille, you know, like we're pirates, we're artists, and they keep kind of going on and on. We're a rough group. We like to have fun. But at the end of the day, the people that you're picking on and riding all day, those are the people you go out and drink with.
Yeah.
Why do chefs wear white? Because you guys spill stuff on yourselves. You'd think it would be a darker color that would be better.
The purpose of the white is to show that you actually work clean.
I guess that
is
makes
that what
sense.
It is.
It is. It is. And I'll tell you a little behind the scenes story from the show. We had two aprons every day. One was for when we cooked, and the other one was for when we interviewed. And the wardrobe lady couldn't figure out which one I cooked in and which one I interviewed in because they were both clean.
Wow.
Really?
Yeah.
Tonight's episode has already been taped, right?
Right.
You tape so how far in advance? Like, where are you?
He can't tell us, you know.
That's actually going to be my question is, they always threaten. No, I'm not trying to trick you, but they always threaten the people on any of these reality shows that if they spill anything valuable, you're out. And I don't want that to happen to you, but have you taped the entire season already?
The entire season's done.
It is. All right. So you already know the answer. Don't say who it is.
I might know the answer. If I'm there till the end, I would know. But who knows if I'm there till the end?
All right. You guys better stop because somebody's going
to
slip here.
I don't want anyone to get in trouble.
You're a culinary arts professor at Joliet Junior College. I love the fact that men want to cook now. I think it's cool. Chefs are the rock stars today. And are you a good teacher?
I like to think so.
Do you have fun in class?
That's my thing in class is sometimes I'll say I put the F-U in fun. But, if you're not having fun, you're not learning.
That's
but
true.
I do take what I do very seriously. So they need to do what they're supposed to do in class. And if they're not, then, unfortunately it's corrected. But
what's the hardest thing to teach the kids? Knife skills?
Oh, knives are great. I mean, they cut themselves putting the knives away, taking them out. And anybody that's an instructor out there listening right now is probably laughing, going, yeah, it's true. We go through a lot of Band-Aids the first day the knives come out.
Every restaurant I go to now, if I ask the waiter or the waitress what it is, and they're explaining it to me, the word reduction keeps coming up. It's a reduction of this, a reduction of that. I don't remember that being a thing when I was younger. Why is reduction so much in vogue right now?
It's in a lot of things. Basically, you're just taking it and reducing it, right? So when you reduce something and boil it, all you're doing is removing the water. So what you end up with is a concentrated flavor. So if you're reducing wine, you get more wine flavor.
Oh.
It becomes thicker. Stocks you can reduce down to make sauces, so you're just intensifying the nice flavor that you want and getting the water out of there.
But did they always call it a reduction? I don't remember that at all when I was younger, but now every time I come
in... Who would you have heard that from? I mean, Julia Child used to say that when she would make her roux, which is what? Flour, butter...
Look at you guys, we're cooking.
I love to cook. I really do. But I think she would say that.
reduction. Don't leave, Andy. Stay here.
Julia, where are you?
What is that awesome movie? Is it Chef with Jon Favreau? Have you seen that?
I love that movie.
It is one of the best movies ever.
I love that movie, and I hate molten chocolate cake, so it's like all wrapped up in one.
I don't like that either.
Why? How could you guys hate molten chocolate cake? It's delicious.
It squirts at you.
It does squirt at you. It does. And that death by chocolate, that should be illegal, right?
You
don't want to die by chocolate.
You can't kill the guest.
Right. That makes for a bad evening.
I wish we could say congratulations, but I guess we still can because you're among the seven finalists. It's called America's Best Baker, and Chef Andy Shalbana could be it. Watch tonight at 9 o'clock. It's 9 o'clock Central on the Food Network.
Correct, 9 o'clock.
What did you bring us today? Because they're beautiful.
I brought you some sweet potato whoopie pies.
They taste like Whoopi Goldberg.
Which is great. There are no eyebrows on them, right. So that's good.
It's safe to eat. What goes into these, Andy?
So it's basically...
Sweet potatoes?
Yeah, sweet potatoes.
Really?
Yeah.
They're yam-tastic.
You can stick your nose in there and smell the spices. There's some cinnamon, nutmeg, a little bit of clove. So kind of like a lot of warm fall spices. The sweet potato, it's basically like a cake kind of cookie that you bake, and then it's filled with white chocolate cream.
Oh, that sounds good. This is your invention or somebody else's?
Something I just threw together this week.
Wow.
Really?
Wow.
I mean, whoopie pies are pretty popular right now.
Yeah.
It's something you can pick up. It's always fun to eat.
Be honest. I hate to put you on the spot. Pumpkin spice, yay or nay?
Nay.
I hate it.
We're
all three of us.
Yeah.
I don't even know why it is around.
It's in everything.
It's been thrown at us, and we don't want it.
I actually saw it in deodorant the other day.
Really?
I don't know what to believe you. You really do teach a fun class, I can only imagine. Good luck.
Thank you.
It's so nice to meet you. You guys can talk about Oak Forest.
We're going to.
You went to this. I always doubted.
Saint grade school.
I doubted the name of your grade school because I'm like, there is no Saint Damien.
Yeah.
That's Damien was the kid's name in The Omen. I didn't believe
it
you.
It was named after him.
And then.
This was 666 Natalie Drive.
And Andy went there, too. Isn't that a small world?
Well, we were told when we went to school at St. Damien that he was the one who cured the lepers, that he went to leper colonies and he cured them.
In Molokai?
Because
Molokai was the leper island in Hawaii.
I think it was the Bronx.
It was in the Bronx, New York.
Yeah.
He did. They didn't have travel visas then. It was so nice to meet you, Andy. Thanks
so
much. Good luck. We hope you win.
Thank you so much, Steve. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. And I know, Steve, you like to read books. Bill, your favorite book, author anyway, F. Scott Fitzgerald.
Yeah.
My favorite author would be Kevin Guilfoyle.
Oh, is that right?
Yes, and he happens to be in the studio with Scott Smith. Kevin, I got to tell you, I'm not a big book reader. I'd rather play a video game or watch TV or something. And I saw a little write-up about your book, Cast of Shadows, many years ago in the Tribune magazine, and it seemed so intriguing I had to read it. It is one of my favorite books ever.
Well, thank you. Thanks, Wendy.
You're absolutely welcome. Well, now you get together with Scott Smith. You write a short story. All of a sudden, the next thing I'm reading in our local paper that this is becoming a movie.
Yeah, it was a short story that was published, about 10 years ago. And Scott could probably better tell you how he discovered it. But he called me up one day and said, we found the story. We think it'd make a good movie. And, I had some experience with people trying to make movies from my novels. And I was like, yeah, right. You're going to, I know how hard that is to do. I said, sure, absolutely, if you want to do that. And then Scott asked if I would help him write the screenplay. And so we did that together. And
it will be at the Chicago Film Festival.
It's premiering at the Chicago Film Festival on Saturday, October 14th.
Awesome.
Congrats. Scott, what did you see in the story that made you realize it would make for a good film?
It really painted an amazing picture. These quirky characters, quirky story. And at first, my producer, John Fromstein, found it in the book, and he thought it would be a great short film, because we were doing some short films and such. And so he sent it over to me, and I'm like, oh, my God, we should make this into a feature. So like Kevin said, I called him, asked him if he ever thought about it, and he rolled his eyes, you could tell over the phone. We talked about it, and then I sent him some ideas, and we just started batting the script back and forth, and it evolved to what it is.
Chasing the Blues is the name of it. It will be part of the Chicago International Film Festival, and it is star-studded. Tell us who's in it.
It has John Lovitz, Steve Guttenberg. It also stars Grant Rosenmeier, who was one of Ben Stiller's sons in the Royal Tenenbaums.
Oh, really? I love that movie.
He's great. He's terrific in it. And
still with the bushy hair, or is the bushy hair all
gone? The bushy hair is gone.
Yeah.
But it's a different sort of bushy
hair. Yeah, I guess that's true.
Yeah,
you wouldn't necessarily recognize him. Anna Maria Hosford, who I know many, many people would recognize if they saw her, if they don't recognize her name. She's been in...
Chelsea Tavares is in it.
Chelsea Tavares. Ron Connor, who's a Chicago guy.
Go back to Lovitz for a little bit.
Bill, this might be your in.
I'm hoping, because he and I have been trying to play tennis. Me, always ready. John, never ready to play tennis. All right, so you got him and you got Gutenberg. How did that come about? Because that's a pretty good casting right there.
We, when we were casting, we were going out to several agents, and one of them happened to be Gutenberg's agent. And as we found out later, it was both Gutenberg and Lovitz's agent.
Oh, perfect.
So it started with Gutenberg. He wanted to actually play the lead, and we didn't think he was right for it. He actually flew into town, met with John and I to try and, kind of sell us on his idea.
Yeah.
Which was awesome. I mean, we got some great stories. He's, super smart guy, super nice, and just had to say, it's not right. But if you do want something, we'd love to have you play something. So then all of a sudden, we get a message that, hey, John Lovitz read the script, and he is really interested in the part of Groom. And I was like, what?
That wouldn't be bad.
Yeah, so I started imagining it, and we had a phone call, and it was great. He was the one in the film. He puts on a southern accent because the guy's from Louisiana, And he's like, yeah, thinking of doing a southern accent. What do you think? I'm like, just work on it, and we'll talk when you get in town.
He pulls it off, though?
Yeah.
He's great.
He's really
the villain. He's sort of the villain in the film. And it's not when I first heard, the movie is a dark comedy.
Yeah.
But that part is written pretty straight.
Right? Yeah. Right.
And I never would have imagined him in this part, which is why I'm glad I wasn't involved in that end of the production, because he puts this spin on this character that is so interesting and so surprising and not at all like I imagined it, and it's just terrific.
But if you watch him, I mean, I know he's known as, you know, mostly for Saturday Night Live work, but if you see him in like A League of Their Own,
yeah,
he really does have a lot of depth, doesn't he?
He had a lot of really amazing stories as well about people he's worked with and what he's learned, and he teaches acting, which I didn't know.
Yeah.
You know, in L.A. when he's there. And he plays tennis, I hear.
Yeah. That's what I hear. Well, but I can't find any evidence.
He made you do, like, show me how you would serve.
Let me see your backhand. How does that go?
And you just to humor him, he gave me Jerry his dog. Right. And is Jerry in the movie?
Jerry was not in the movie. He was everywhere in everybody's hands. Let me help Jerry. You know, it's like
Jerry Bruckheimer.
Bruckheimer.
The dog's name is Jerry Bruckheimer.
So he wanted you, let me see how you'd hit a ball. Let me see your serve. And you're like, this is ridiculous. I'm just going through the motions.
Yeah.
You did the motions and he criticized you.
I would cream you. It wouldn't even be close. It'd be embarrassing for all tennis.
Well, he'll be in for the premiere of this. This is next weekend.
A week from Saturday, the 14th.
All right, so, you know.
Maybe.
You should go stalk him. Just show up in your tennis whites with your racket. And,
see what he does.
Yeah.
All right, maybe.
All right, it's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. We are talking with Kevin Guilfoyle, who's an author, film director Scott Smith. They have put together this Chasing the Blues. Kevin Guilfoyle, you wrote this short story, and I've just seen the synopsis. I have an 18-year-old son who didn't think he liked the blues. He went to a blues camp, and all of a sudden, he immersed himself in the blues. He plays slide guitar, Howlin', he loves all this stuff, and he collects vinyl. He will love this movie, I have a feeling.
The movie is for him. It's about a pair of record collectors in Chicago who are both obsessed with this mythically rare blues record from the 30s called "Oh Death, Where Is Thy Sting," and it's so rare that in fact that most people don't even believe it actually exists, and it is rumored to have the screams of a woman being murdered on it. And so they both at one point believe that there's a copy of it in this old woman's apartment in Hyde Park, and so the part of the movie is about their attempts to con both her and each other out of this record in the 80s. And then, and that's what the short story was originally about. The movie expands also into the present 20 years later, when they get out of prison for what transpired in that apartment, and they're still obsessed with this record.
Interesting that Steve Guttenberg's in this movie, since he has a parallel. There's always rumors about his movie Three Men and a Baby.
Oh yeah,
that there's somebody murdered in one of the scenes.
That's right, and there was like a cardboard cutout of Ted Danson, behind a curtain or something, in the background of one of the
strange
scenes.
Strange parallel. Yeah.
Exactly why we cast.
Exactly.
And John Lovitz used to listen to Love Roller Coaster,
Love Roller Coaster. Yes,
where
right.
there was another the Ohio Players right, a scream in the background.
That's right.
Yeah, it all ties in. Doesn't it? What a story! So when you find out that this short story needs to be expanded to full length for a future film, what's the first thing you do?
Well, Scott and I started batting ideas around, and I think that the very first decision, you know, the story is a pretty sort of a thriller. It's like a mystery thriller, and I think Scott really wanted to put a comic spin on it, which I thought was a great idea. And so
still keeping the mystery angle to it,
right?
Yeah.
And so, but play up the quirkiness of it rather than, you know, and and so then I think probably for practical reasons, we're like, let's try to set this in the present. It's much cheaper to make it
a period piece. But there's
parts of it take place in the 30s, there's parts of it take place in the 80s, and then there's elements that take place
originally as Kevin wrote it, it was first person, so it was this guy telling a story while he was in prison. And so what we kind of did, we dimensionalized it. So we actually took the story and showed what happened in the 80s,
yeah,
and then, like Kevin said, 20 years later, and then sort of reenacted 1930s studio with Jimmy Cain Baldwin.
That's excellent. And
yeah, it was really, it was fun.
I can't wait to see this next Saturday, or no, a week from this Saturday.
The 14th.
Yeah, the 14th. Okay.
ChicagoFilmFestival.com to find out all the showings and what else is playing. What if we can't make it that night? How can we see Chasing the Blues?
It's actually three screenings. It'll is the 14th, then it's the following Wednesday.
The 18th.
The 18th, and then the following Saturday at, as well.
Kevin, you mentioned that in the past they have tried to take other things that you've written and make them into films, and it hasn't been successful. What went wrong?
I don't know that it's something necessarily went wrong. It's just very... difficult. It's been hard to do. Cast of Shadows, they've been working on for years and years. And right now it is actually in development with the former showrunners from Grey's Anatomy.
Really?
Who are trying to develop it into a TV series.
Oh, my God. That would be so good.
So we'll see what happens. But
you need a Hemsworth brother in it.
That's
the way you sell anything right now. Throw a Hemsworth in there.
And real quickly, Kevin, your son was in the news, too, naming his baseball team. Give us a little something on that.
Yeah, so my son is on a 10-year-old travel baseball team, and the coaches let him let them name the team, and they decided to name it the Illuminati, as 10-year-olds will. And
when you asked him why, his answer was what?
I don't think they could. They just somebody suggested it and they all started laughing and they said, yeah, you know, they know that from like YouTube videos,
yeah.
And they're all the show Gravity Falls really goes into that,
yeah, yeah.
That TV show. And so when he got his uniform, I thought it was so hilarious. It's just like if you were in the Illuminati that you would have a softball team with the name, right? It's just so funny.
Right.
So I took a picture of him, I put it on Twitter and it went crazy. And
it went viral, as the kids say.
Yeah, and so we actually, for a while, we ran out of merch, and so we shut it down. But we were selling caps and sweatshirts and t-shirts and jerseys for a couple of months, and raised about $6,000
wow.
for the team.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I want one. I mean, I want to have a jersey that says Illuminati. I think that's so cool.
I might have a stray one. I might be able
all right,
to find
please.
One.
I would love that.
Well, congratulations to both of you, author Kevin Guilfoyle, director Scott Smith.
Thank you.
Chasing the Blues is what it's called. There's a Facebook page for it and a website still and everything.
Yeah, so website, chasingtheblues.com. It's on the Chicago Film Festival site.
You can see the trailer there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's so exciting. And please tell Lovitz, I already started to tell you this, I'll donate, whoever loses the match has to give a certain amount to charity. There have been so many big things happen in the last couple of weeks. So I would say to John, if you lose or I lose, I'll donate $500 or $1,000 to the charity of your choice. If that gets him in, I would love to finally play him.
We'll all tell right. him. We'll
what if he just whites. Does like a shadow tennis game, like in a studio
tennis?
Here?
Yeah, yeah maybe.
Right. I wonder if he's good. I'll dog sit Jerry for
would
the day.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's see if we can make it happen.
Table tennis. That might be even.
I mean, even better. All right.
Yeah,
let's
he's
do
better.
That. Let's do that. All right, guys. Good luck.
Congratulations.
With We're so
Thank
happy
you.
For both of you.
It.
It's really great news.
Thanks.
All right.
Thanks for having us.
Get up. Get on up. Get up. Bill, can we take this interview on the air?
I prefer that we didn't.
Bill Love, Wendy Snyder. We are joined by Dane Neal. He is your host with the most for On the Road Saturdays 2 to 4. And we like to see him on Wednesdays. Hi, Dane.
Hello. Hello.
That's my few words,
that's
Dane.
That's my serious news voice.
Yes.
Because it is news. You know, we try to highlight the news of the day when it comes to the news of the month, where the entire country, Chicago, of course, you know, is, I think, the epicenter of the food world in so many different ways, mm-hmm. and we try to highlight that. But now it is, when you have any kind of holiday, let's say it was Bill Leff's birthday. If it was national Bill Leff's birthday, it would be a bigger deal, right?
You would think,
the Bill Leffs of the nation would be involved supporting it. Well, it is National Seafood Month. Right? You got an entire month. You know you can't jam all that goodness into just one day. You got a whole month, and the entire country is celebrating.
I could eat seafood for a whole month. I could do it probably for a whole year.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I don't know if you go National Seafood Year because then all the other...
It's not as special.
Hey, we don't get our own month. Well, there's a lot of things being highlighted. And when it comes to Chicago, and you guys know this, for 30-plus years, when it comes to seafood, doing it and doing it right in a bunch of locations, not only in the restaurant side. We all know, love it, have experienced it. So many of us have, whether it's in the suburbs in Schaumburg or the iconic location downtown, but also events to celebrate. Because what's the point of having a National Bill Leff month
if you don't
have parties right to celebrate it.
Right.
And Shaw's Crab House is doing that. And in studio we have Bill Nevruz. He is the managing partner. Bill, welcome to WGN.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Nice to see you,
Thank
Bill.
You for Shaw's. I like the Schaumburg one because I'm a suburbanite. It's awesome.
Hey, I like that restaurant, too. I live right in between, so it's easy for me to get to both.
You can choose.
Do you have, like, an underground tunnel so you can access them?
One to another.
Right.
I was just saying to you, we had our going-away party for Kevin, our producer at Shaw's, last week, and it's always good, but I love the way the restaurant is structured where there's a dressier, more formal side, and then there's kind of an oyster bar up front. It's a nice decision to make which side you want to go to.
I think you're always stuck on the one side.
I'm always on the one side, the more casual side.
You know, it's funny. Whoever I talk to always says what you just said, which is we like the casual side.
Yeah.
And I wonder why the formal side is always full of somebody.
Yeah.
Which is pretty cool. Everyone always says they want to be the casual
side. It's businessmen and businesswomen and then the ragamuffins, guys like me. We sit over in the casual side.
I think it's more diners who keep their own thoughts and preferences closer to the vest.
That's what it is.
Not talking about it.
Right. That's exactly what it is. But it's almost like having two very distinct restaurants right next to each other, both with delicious food choices.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And it gives you a chance to go there more often because you can have two different experiences.
True.
Well, it's called Shaw's Crab House, but so well known for oysters, Oyster Fest, and the oyster has been kind of, and we were talking about it a little bit in the green room and certainly days before this, is you think of oysters, a lot of the uninitiated think of them kind of in the way that bananas are thought of, where you just, it is what it is, you know, where there are different varieties. You got your East Coast, you got your West Coast, you got other ones that are in harvest, and it's really cool to know the difference because there is one, right?
There is absolutely a difference. You know, I was just talking to a couple that was in the restaurant last night, and they were having oysters for, not the first time, but kind of beginning that oyster journey for themselves. And they asked me the very same question. They were like, you know, we can't tell them apart. And I said, you know, it's kind of like beer or wine or anything else. Like, the more you eat it, the more you kind of study it, the more you can sense the differences, and the more you get into it.
I think I had my first oyster last year, Dane, when you brought oysters up, and I was scared to try it, and wow, they're good.
Yeah. You started the journey.
Yeah, I'm still a beginner, as was pointed out by Bill. I've started my journey, my oyster journey.
How did you eat the oyster? Did you put anything on it, or did you just eat it plain?
There was something on it. I don't know if there was a little Tabasco or something. I can't remember now, actually.
Maybe some lemon, but I'm...
Oh, just lemon.
Yeah. Yeah, it was just a little bit of something, but...
It scared me. I got to be honest with you.
But part of it, you think of, you know, we all remember back the days of the ancient fish stick, right? You know,
sure.
It was maybe more breading than it was fish. And when you really get into enjoying seafood as it is, you're going to want to taste those flavors, right? Mm-hmm. So a lot of the liquid that's inside there, you're not just going to want to cover it in cheese and Tabasco if you can, right? If they're really good.
Right. I think that it's just the way to savor real... Speaking of really good seafood...
It's coming in.
Yeah.
By the truckload.
The Gordon's fishermen
coming in all of a sudden. but now, Bill, help me with this, because I've heard people, seafood aficionados, say that the best way to eat one is to not savor the taste, is to let it go down your throat quickly. Is that true?
You know, I think you should savor it however you want to savor it.
And I chewed it.
Yeah, Wendy was chewing it and then tried to blow a bubble. An oyster bowl.
But you can chew it, right?
Absolutely. So when I eat an oyster, I usually take the whole oyster in my mouth and I chew it once or twice and swallow it.
Yeah.
Anybody who tells you how to eat an oyster should keep their opinion to themselves.
Ah, too pretentious.
Yeah.
Yeah. Enjoy it as any way you please.
Any way you please.
Right.
Is it common for people to be scared the first time they try one? Because it does look kind of crazy, I got to admit.
Yeah, it is, I mean, they're not the, when you first look
pretty.
At it, it was a brave soul who ate the first oyster.
But and the listeners, of course, on radio can't necessarily see it. At WGN Radio, you can see it, but Bill had, he cocked his head a little bit. He had kind of this sensitive, softer side, as though he was kind of like, yeah, I get it. You know, it can be a little bit crazy looking. This is, a creature from the sea, but I'm with you. I mean, you were very sensitive there. I like that.
I'm a sensitive man.
Yeah.
I mean, think about it. Shrimp aren't that pretty. Crabs are ugly.
Some
I don't
foods.
Lobsters are not that pretty, but boy, they taste good.
Well, you know, with the oyster, I think, especially here in the Midwest, if you didn't grow up around the ocean, the flavor is so oceany. Unlike other seafood.
Yeah.
And so, you know, my wife grew up in Michigan, and we go on vacations, and sometimes we go to lakes and have vacations.
Yeah.
And I prefer the ocean. And she thinks the ocean makes her feel dirty.
And so,
but if someone's selling you Lake Michigan oysters, you may
want to
go
you
elsewhere.
You may want to check
right?
out another vendor.
Chicago River oysters, not that popular.
No. You know, the idea of putting this salty thing in your mouth, it's nostalgic for me. It's an emotional decision I make, and it reminds me of playing around and tossing around in the ocean. And that's kind of the flavors that you get. The oyster tastes like the water that it came from.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Can you just look at an oyster and tell the difference between it and other brands of oysters,
like,
types of oysters?
Yeah. Yes.
You can?
I can. I'm not always right.
That's right.
Are the shells different? Is that what gives it away?
The shells are different. And, you know, it depends on where they're from, East Coast or West Coast. It largely depends on how they're grown, whether they're in a bag or they grow in the sand, and it creates different different waves, different looks, different depths of cup, yeah. Whether they're flat or not.
I know that you've got a couple different varieties here, and you've got them here for us to try and get a little bit of the backstory. Is there one that is markedly better? Certainly people have an affinity wherever they grew up and whatever they're used to, mm-hmm. but is there something, you know, that's kind of grabbed hold and like, these are the best ones, and the other ones are pretty good too, or is it really just kind of what you like?
You know, I think it really is what you like. Now, there are certain oysters that are more popular, and I brought two of the most popular oysters that are on the market today. Mm-hmm. A West Coast oyster from Hama Hama, which is in Washington State, and a East Coast oyster, Island Creek, which is from Duxbury, Massachusetts. Now, these oysters are some of the most popular. I think they're also very delicious. And they are very different styles, so when you eat these today, hopefully you will.
Is there an East Coast, West Coast oyster war the way there is in rap music, though?
Yes, there all is. The East Coast oysters come with red bandanas, and the West Coast comes with brown.
That's
blue.
How you tell them apart. Are you going to have one?
I can't. I'm not allowed.
Have you ever had one?
Yeah, I've had them. I love seafood.
You just didn't have it great. Remember your first Ponderosa steak? Nothing against those folks. Yes. Is that the same as like a really great butcher shop ribeye? No.
It's not.
It's different, but still good. It brings back memories.
Yeah,
it does.
It does. It does.
All right. Some members of the staff will be enjoying oysters in just a little bit. Others will be looking on longingly and wishing that they
appreciated
them
more. And contemplating.
And contemplating whether or not they should try them.
All right, I just enjoyed an East Coast oyster. Was that what I had, Bill?
That is Island Creek oyster. Duxbury, Massachusetts is actually my favorite.
It tastes like Massachusetts. It does,
wait,
though.
Please explain that. What does that mean?
It's just, you explained to me that the East Coast ones are kind of like the East Coast people, a little salty.
A little more salty.
It has a Kennedy aftertaste. Now we're talking oysters.
My oyster.
I, for some reason, that flavor makes me feel like I'm on the East Coast.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that
clean,
right?
Crisp? Yeah.
It's really good.
A great flavor, but yeah, but somehow it's able to transport you to that part of the country to enjoy some of those things. Part of it is, I'm sure a great part of it is the fact that it is what it is, curated in that way, and then, you know, Bill shucked it personally right here just moments ago, so mm-hmm. it's about as fresh as it can be here in Chicago.
It can't be any fresher, yeah.
Do you need a shucking tool?
I do. I have it right here. This is a shucking knife.
Wow.
Now great. That's a shocking knife. you know you can't fly with that, right? Be very careful where you bring that. It's very dangerous.
I am actually quite aware that
very,
I cannot.
Very dangerous.
I purchased a very nice custom shucking knife in Seattle on a trip.
Yeah.
And realized, because I only had a carry-on, I got to the airport I couldn't take it with me. And I had to throw in that
terrible.
Big garbage can where everyone puts their drinks.
Was it like
and
a pearl-handled one, you know, with like, you know, some inlays?
It was a hand-carved handle.
One that you could carry on in generations to come, right? You give that to your children, they give it to their children.
And now it's in a garbage can with
Bill.
A bunch of
I'm sure it's at the TSA guy's house.
Right.
Where he's proudly shucking.
He's got a great, right. You have brought in another type of oyster, and that's one I would gladly try. I don't like them raw, but you've baked some up, huh?
We have baked some, and we brought four different kinds. We, you know, during Oyster Fest, we put on a bunch of different oyster dishes on the menu. And these four that we brought today are a horseradish-crusted oyster,
mm-hmm.
an oyster's Rockefeller, which is a traditional dish that we've had on the menu for 33 years. We do a blue crab-stuffed oyster, which is actually my favorite of the baked dishes.
That sounds really good.
And then a shrimp-topped baked oyster, which is amazing.
As if the oyster wasn't enough.
Well,
you got some friends involved.
But wait, there's more. Oh,
yeah.
They all sound good.
I got to go to the brunch. I'm on the website right now, shawscrabhouse.com. Brunch, that sounds good. Lots of seafood.
It is over the top. I tell people all the time, if you go to that brunch and you don't think it's the best brunch you've ever been to,
mm-hmm.
There's something
what
wrong
will
with
you.
Something
do?
Wrong with you. Yeah. No, it's still you. You're the problem.
I thought you were going to say we'll return your money, but no. It's just something's wrong with
we
you.
We get you help.
After I get you help, I won't charge you.
Well, you think about it. For National Seafood Month, so many, we've talked about in the team photo, the oyster is obviously out front and one of those big stars, but so many different stars, and Shaw's has a lot of them for this 10 days of what you guys have, a bunch of different events. You mentioned the brunch, but there's, you know, not only slurp off contests for your competitive types, but also a bunch of different things, like some different parties and dinners and things like that. Let's talk about them.
So we lead things off on tomorrow night. We're doing a tap release with a partnership that we do with Haymaker. And they've made an incredible lemon rising saison that it goes great with oysters that we're going to carry on our tap handles for the for Oyster Fest. And we one of my favorite events that we're going to do is going to be on Thursday the 12th, where we're doing a dinner called Coast to Coast, where we're featuring these two oysters that I brought with me today. So some of the makers from Hamahama are coming out and from Island Creek as well. And we're going to do a dinner that is a tribute to these oysters and a secret course where we're tributing Chef Waldmeier, who is the chef of the Drake Hotel in the Cape Cod Room for 3 decades.
Oh.
And we're featuring his bookbinder soup. And coincidentally, his daughter is one of our managers. She's a general manager of Oyster Bar in Lincoln Park. And it's going to be, she'll be there for as his proxy talking about the soup.
Beautiful.
We have Tom, who has a question that I have recently heard. And I think, Bill, you heard this as well. Tom, go ahead. You're supposed to avoid oysters when?
Yeah, my wife grew up on the East Coast, and she's told me that they learned or were taught that you should avoid oysters if there's not an R in the name of the month. So that would be what, May, June, July, and August, because it's warmer waters.
Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
That makes sense a little bit, and it makes sense a lot in years past. So we don't avoid oysters in those months. We just simply go more north to get our oysters. So as this time of year, October, November, are the best times to get oyster simply because the variety is so high.
Yep.
We can go all the way down to Virginia and get oysters because the waters are cooler. But in those summer months that don't end in R, we typically just go more north. We go to British Columbia and get our oysters from colder water. And those waters obviously have less to worry about than warmer waters.
There you go, Tom.
Thanks, Tom.
Thank you very much.
Bill, you know how with crabs, there's parts of the year where you get soft-shell crabs because the crabs quite aren't ready yet. Is there an oyster equivalent to that, or is that only something in the crab world?
No. You know,
like that's the world I live in, by the way, is the crab
universe.
World.
Right. The other part of the universe, the oyster world.
Yeah.
You know, there are some parts of the season where the oysters are spawning.
Yeah.
And so you're forced to maybe get more East Coast oysters and West Coast oysters because of the way they're reproducing. And then, you know, the months and end in R kind of thing.
That holds true.
But again, you can go year round with great oysters. You just simply have to go to the waters where they're great.
Yeah.
And different tastes for cold water and warm water oysters, just like with lobster tail.
You know, and some oysters, yes, some oysters, no. Like these Hamahamas, they say that if you harvest them during the summer months, they tend to be sweeter. And in the winter months, they tend to be brinier.
Oh, that's interesting.
Is that the California West Coast one?
That's the Washington State oyster, yeah. And, you know, they in the summer months, they hang in bags that are closer to the surface. In the winter months, they drop them down to avoid the ice.
Interesting.
You brought in baked oysters. Has anyone tried grilling them, or is that impossible?
No, we grill them all the time.
So,
yeah, they're delicious. They're delicious that way.
That
and it's,
does
it's,
sound
a,
good.
It's a really easy way to do it at home, too,
yeah?
To grill oysters. You just throw them on your barbecue, and you just... throw a little butter
lemon,
on top of
butter.
Them. Just, yeah, lemon butter, and that's good.
So after October 15th, you can do a lot of this stuff at home, but there's only one way to get to the grand finale. So talk about, because we talked a little bit about the brunch. It's supposedly amazing, but
yeah.
The grand finale, if you want to mention that, it sounds really cool.
So the grand finale is like all of this all in one night. So we've got oyster dishes, we've got food, we've got a party in our oyster bar, which I think is just like the coolest. I've been to... over 100 oyster bars in this country. I still don't think there's one that has more fun baked in, excuse the pun.
Are you incognito in disguise?
And we've got live music, we've got drinks, we've got food, and it's just a party all night long, and I would invite everybody to come.
And again, Bill, if you don't enjoy it, something's obviously wrong with
you. Wrong with you.
That's fair.
And it's shawscrabhouse.com where you get all the information and tickets and get over there.
All the information is just one click away. You just go to the website.
Good. Bill,
I'm looking
great
at the sip and slurp right now.
Doesn't that sound good?
Yep.
Yeah. Great to see you, Bill. Again, Shaw's is one of the best. You should be very proud. I know you are.
Thank you very much.
Dane, great to see you.
I'm also proud.
You should be proud for something. I don't know, but something.
We'll
thanks, Dane Neal. Thanks, Bill. Thanks, David. Hi, everybody. It's Bill F. and it's Wendy Snyder. We're 312-981-7200. You can call us there or you can text us there with any questions or comments or anything you like. You didn't by any chance happen to watch or hear any of the Yankees-Twins one-day playoff game extravaganza, did you, yesterday?
No.
You didn't see it?
Do you really think I would have?
I didn't think you did. I didn't think you would have watched it. I guess you have to be a hardcore baseball fan to watch the teams that don't involve
you.
Well, yeah, the Cubs or the White Sox. I'm nuts about baseball, so I went out of my way. Now, the first inning or two, I couldn't see on television. I was working out, but I listened to them on satellite radio, and I'll explain that part of it in just a little bit. But I want to tell you, I'm a little bit angry with the New York Yankees because they've stolen something from the Cubs that I don't think you're allowed to steal.
The fake interview thing?
The fake interview thing.
That's what they stole?
Yeah. The Cubs started
That's
doing
a good
this
thing.
Thing
to steal, I got to tell you.
It's one of the funniest things I've ever seen. The Cubs do, we've mentioned this on the show, there's a couple things that they've added to their repertoire this year. One of them is when a Cub hits a home run, they go and it just started out as an interview. You know, somebody would hold a fake microphone, or actually it was a real microphone, not hooked up to anything. As you pointed out, much like my microphone is here in the studio.
Well, the one we should have for you.
Right. So they pretend to be interviewing whoever hit the home run, and now they've added a guy who does like a sound, a boom mic and stuff, and they've added a cameraman. Yeah.
That's
so
funny.
Now it's like a 3 or 4 man operation, and I think that's really funny. I think it's funny when the guys in the bullpen do crazy dances when a guy hits
like
home run.
That.
I love all that stuff. But I don't know if the Cubs invented it or what, but I never saw anybody do it until the Cubs started doing it this year. But now the Yankees yesterday, they did it every time a Yankee hit a home run, and I think that's our intellectual property.
I don't think you can take that as intellectual property when it's a sports team.
But shouldn't they have to think up something clever on their own and not just steal from us? Like, I still don't know. You know how the White Sox started a thing years and years ago when a guy in the White Sox would hit a home run? They would play that na-na, hey-hey, goodbye.
Right, by Steam.
By Steam.
Didn't Nancy Faust originally start that?
See,
I thought
what
she
I don't
did.
Know if she was the one who came up with it. But then after that became a thing with the White Sox, a half a dozen other teams around baseball also started doing it.
Remember also, God, what was it? The Alan Parsons Project, when the Bulls would come out, and now
right.
It's like do-do-do-do-do-do-do.
Yeah.
Then all the other teams used it. I mean,
they started doing it, and almost every wedding I went to for 8 years, they would also do it to introduce the bridal party.
Like that got old in about what two weddings?
Every wedding I went to for 8 or 10 years, they did that
and
at the beginning. Yeah, your bridal party.
You're right.
A friend of Marianne since high school.
You're right.
That became a thing.
I forgot about that.
Also, the bride and her father would start to dance, and it was awkward. And then all of a sudden, the music would change, and they would really be good dancers. That became a thing at weddings.
Oh, I never saw that.
Yeah, it was at several weddings where that became a thing. All right. Here's the thing I did like, though. I don't know who does the Yankee games on radio. I have no idea who does it. All I know is that it's a man and a woman, and the woman sounds exactly like Paula Poundstone. But that's all I can tell you. I know it's not Paula Poundstone doing Yankees broadcasts. But whoever they got, imagine Paula Poundstone doing a baseball game. That's what it is.
I can't imagine that, quite honestly.
It's a hard push, because when you think of Paula Poundstone, you don't think of baseball broadcasts. But whoever the woman is sounds just like her.
Do you have audio?
So I didn't bring. No, I don't know how to bring audio of this. But here's what happened that I did like. The Yankees have a shortstop, and his name is Didi Gregorius. He's been the Yankee shortstop for a while. And he can do everything well. He's a great defensive shortstop, and he can hit. And last night he hit a big 3-run home run to tie the game up. And here's what I thought was cool. As the ball is traveling out, the announcer on radio, the guy, not Paula Poundstone, but he goes, yes, indeedy, because his name is Didi Gregorius.
Oh, I like that.
So I like that. But then he tops it off with, Didi Gregorius has made this crowd euphorious.
What, is he the pun master? I mean, come on.
I don't know. And I don't know if Didi Gregorius...
I think you're thinking of her name is Susan Waldman.
That's Susan Waldman.
Who sounds like Paula Poundstone.
Sounds just like Paula Poundstone. Just like her. So I don't know if every time a Yankee hits a home run, he says the same thing. Didi Gregorius has made this crowd euphorious. Or I don't know if he says, like, Dita Gregorius has just done something glorious.
He's got a fun name to play with. You know, if your name, what's a common named Yankee?
Oh, I don't. Oh, there's got to be.
Or like Bill Smith.
Yeah, let's see.
He wouldn't be doing anything like that.
Right. Plus, pay that bill right now. It wouldn't be anything. It wouldn't have that same kind of.
Why aren't you announcing it at Yankee Stadium?
Well, can I tell you what's funny is I drove home yesterday with Dave Ennett, and I don't know how we got.
That is funny.
Well, that's funny in and of itself, but the funnier part is I said to Bill, I said to Dave, I'm Bill, right? We had to wear name tags because I got confused. I said to Dave. Dave, let's say we here at WGN had a major league contract. We used to, you know, the Cubs were here for a while, Wendy. And I said, let's say we got one now, and it was up to you to pick the broadcast team. Who would you pick? And he paid you and me a very nice compliment. He said, I think I'd let you and Wendy do a couple of the games.
My God,
wouldn't
what
that
is
be
he
fun?
Thinking? No.
Wouldn't that be fun to call a couple major league baseball games here on GN?
It would be fun, and I would actually have to do my homework, so yeah, I kind of would like to do it.
You'd have to prepare stuff like Dede Gregorius.
Oh, I'd have a bunch of stuff.
Has made this crowd euphorious. Nobody cares more about the environment than Al Gorius. You gotta have some variations ready.
Oh, my God.
But I thought that was really cool, and it almost made up for what I saw later, which was them stealing our fake interview after a home run.
Well, I guess it's common to steal things. Someone has texted us, and I don't know if this is true, and maybe you know. Dan Hampton created the Gatorade dump. Is that true?
I don't think that's true.
I don't either.
I don't think so.
Oh, that text was from Dan Hampton.
Oh, he said that?
Sorry. Animal text and say, I don't know that
no,
he did.
I don't.
I'm going to look
that I'm up. Trying to remember the origin of it.
All right, some moron invented the wave, and that was not a good idea to go everywhere.
Whoever that was should be banished from the country.
There is something on Google saying it started in 1985.
This is the Gatorade dump or the
Gatorade
wave?
Dump.
The Gatorade dump?
It was the Giants beating the Redskins, and Jim Bird of the Giants dumped Gatorade over then-head coach Bill Parcells because he was angry that after apparently being treated poorly by Coach Parcells during that week's practice.
He got some revenge.
Yeah.
See, now, Bill Parcells, Wendy, I don't know if you've ever seen Bill Parcells, but he always looks unhappy. He always looks like either somebody has just dumped Gatorade on him or is about to dump Gatorade on him.
Now, it's the legend that Jim Bird did it.
Oh.
It's the legend.
All right.
That'd be easy to prove. You just watch a tape of the game, right?
Well, New York Times is telling me that there is a small faction that believes the Chicago Bears deserve credit for the craze because the former lineman Dan Hampton was said to have spearheaded a dunking of Coach Mike Ditka after a victory in 1984.
Wow.
And this is from the New York Times.
How about that? I never heard.
How
about that? I never heard it attributed to Dan Hampton.
I didn't either.
But Parcells, for some reason, does make sense. Because he just has that crusty. He always looks like that.
All right. Well, that's all I know. And the wave, I feel. Do people still do it?
Every once in a while.
Because if it comes my way, I have to do it, Bill. I don't want to be the wave breaker.
I don't think there's enough people who don't do it.
I don't do it enthusiastically. I'm like, I complain about it. I'm like, all right, what? Okay, go.
You do it grudgingly.
I do. Begrudgingly.
Begrudgingly.
I don't know which.
You don't want to do it, but you do it.
Dede
Gregorius has made this crowd euphorious. Here's the two people at any sporting event that I can't stomach. Whatever you watch, it's mostly a baseball game because it's always a fixed camera angle.
Mm-hmm.
But there's always somebody behind the batter now who's on the phone and waving at a friend all through the game. Like, you would think a minute of that is plenty. Because who's going to watch an entire baseball game just to see Mark from Downers Grove wave at you? But this guy's convinced somebody's... So all through the game, he's waving, right? And then you also get guys during key moments of the game where it would be nice for the crowd to be into it. Like, let's say the score is tied in the bottom of the ninth. There's some guy who stands up and tells the rest of the crowd, like, he lifts both hands, like, let's make a lot of noise. Like, it's his, like, wouldn't that be fun if we all made a lot of noise? Then the team would know that we're behind him. When in reality, if you've ever attended a sporting event, you kind of already know that.
Yep, you don't need to have someone conducting you.
Right.
Yeah, there was one time Jim was at a Sox game with a couple of our neighbors, and the milkman, was that Herbert Perry? Was that his name?
Yes, they called him the milkman, the third baseman. Right.
He, a ball was hit. There had been a rain delay, so they had the tarps that were kind of rolled up. And yeah. Jim and our neighbors were sitting in front of the tarps were in front of them. And a ball was hit to the side, and Jim went over the tarp to get the foul ball, and the milkman gave him a very dirty look.
Oh.
It was out of play and
He's
everything.
He's like the Bartman of the White Sox. Your husband's
kind
the Bartman of the White Sox.
He did. I happened to be watching it at home, so I called him, which was just so stupid because he picked up the phone, and I had it on, I DVR'd it. So you see him answering the phone, and he looks like, what do you want? And then all of a sudden this big smile. And he looks and he waves.
Oh, that was
like,
on TV?
Yeah, I'm like, Jim, you're on TV. He's like, what? I can't hear. Oh, really?
Wow.
So that was,
wow.
We were that family for one day.
Yeah,
yes.
For a little bit.
Let's do the wave.
It's easy when there's two people.
Although it never ends, because you just keep going back and forth.
It is. It's nonstop.
It's the infinity wave, because right. No one wants to break it.
Right.
I see you as a wave breaker.
I am a wave breaker. I'll be honest with you. I am a wave breaker. I'll do it, like, not at a sporting event, but if I go to church for some reason, I'll do it in church. It's always fun. May I share a Trump moment with you?
Do I want you to?
This is a very quick Trump moment. This is the fastest Trump moment of all time. He was in Puerto Rico yesterday, commiserating with the people of Puerto Rico and explaining that the United States is going to do their part to help rebuild and make things better. He was throwing out paper towels to people and stuff, and the mayor kind of criticized him and said that this was just an opportunity for him, you know.
Well,
it was. I mean, he had to go, and I don't know. I'm not defending him at all. I don't know what he could have done, except he did say something, and I'll play the audio for you, that I think is strange.
I think I know what it is.
He's talking to a guy who's just, his life has been ruined. His house is destroyed. Everything near him is gone. And he's explaining to him, you know, what's coming and how things will be better. And listen to this moment from Donald Trump yesterday.
We have a good house.
In the meantime, here you are. Right?
Exactly.
We're going to help you out.
Thank you.
Have a good time.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Have a good time.
It's great to see you.
Was an accident.
We're going to help you out. Yes. But have a good time be difficult at this juncture.
Come on, we've all said something in closing or something, you know.
Right.
I'm trying to think of an example. Like, some people to us will go, have a good show, and we're like, you too. They don't have a show. So, see, I mean, it happens.
I've done that at the airport every time I've ever been at the airport where, the you know, whoever's doing the ticket goes, have a good flight. And I go, yeah, you too. And then I go, well, they're not. Eventually they'll go somewhere.
Right.
Not right this moment.
So he didn't.
That, have a good time, though,
that
seems.
Was bad. But I think, believe me.
He should have ended it with, you know.
He can't end it. That is the problem.
I know.
And I am going to defend him for the first time.
How about this? Mark this date down.
I do feel like, you know, he's so off the cuff that, you know, he sees people at his resorts most likely, so he would say have a good time.
Have a good time at a resort, yes. But when your island is flooded beyond belief,
I know.
Maybe not the best time to wish somebody a good time. Am I being too hard on him?
I think so at this maybe. One time. I'll ask a question that'll just negate all the niceness I had. Did Melania wear her...
I don't know what she
What did wearing. Michael Che call them? The flood heels?
Yeah, the flood heels. Now, when Tillerson spoke earlier today, because he was on and... the news came out that Tillerson may have referred to Trump as
a moron.
Was that question brought up at all today?
That's why he made this announcement.
So he did or did not call him a moron at some point?
Let me get that information. Yes, he kind of sort of admitted that he called Donald Trump a moron. Rex Tillerson, here's the story. This happened when we were getting on the air, I think right before 10 o'clock today. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson on Wednesday tried to knock down a report that he had called President Trump a moron, and considered leaving his post over...
Is that from Animal House?
Yes.
That's Stork from Animal House.
Yes, thank you very much. I didn't know which character, I just knew the movie.
Yeah.
And considered leaving his post over disagreements with the commander-in-chief over the summer, but in the process he may have made things worse for himself. He says, I want to dispel with this notion that I have ever considered leaving. Because a lot of people thought when there was the special announcement that he was going to resign, this wouldn't be a good time for him to resign.
Right.
because Donald Trump is in Las Vegas today. That would be very bad.
Right. But I heard that part. I heard the part about the speculation of his leaving, but I didn't hear whether or not he flat out said, yeah, at some point I may have actually called him a moron. You know, I didn't hear that part.
Asked whether he had indeed referred to Trump as a moron, Tillerson said, I'm not going to deal with petty stuff like that.
Oh, really?
So that means yes.
That has to mean yes.
Because otherwise you'd go, absolutely not.
I wouldn't call the president a moron.
I got other words.
Right. Here's a list. He just pulls out a scroll.
But not moron.
Who's got time? I'll read the whole scroll.
Here's the thing. This is according to CNN.com. Is this real news or fake news? I never know. If Tillerson refused to directly deny calling Trump a moron, you can be almost certain he did, in fact, call the president exactly that.
Yeah.
Because if you didn't, you'd be like, no.
Right.
Absolutely.
Right.
Barbara wants to talk about Donald Trump. Is this him being in Puerto Rico that you're referring to, Barbara?
Yeah, the press conference when he was sitting there and he says, you know, you guys are killing our budget.
Yeah, that was kind of a little flippant.
And how many died? You know, only 16 died here, and with Katrina, there were 1,000.
That was a weird thing to hear. Like this, had this been a real disaster like Katrina? Excuse me, this is a real disaster for them.
Yeah, I thought that those two comments were so out of place and such a slap in the face. And the other thing I've noticed, I was talking to one of my friends at the gym. People in the United States don't realize that Puerto Ricans are American citizens.
Right.
Yep.
This woman said, but you need a passport to go there. I said, no, you don't. It's part of the United States. So why are we so belligerent about helping them out?
Because it's in the middle of a big ocean. I think that's why.
He explained that. Yes. Yeah, there's water all over it.
Lots of water around. Yes.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Yep. Got it.
All right.
Okay.
Thank you, Barbara.
Thanks.
Have a good time.
Bye.
This is all a dream, right? I just.
Yes.
I don't know what's going on.
It's all a dream.
Oh, well. People wanted a shake-up in the White House. We got that.
It's shaken.
It is.